A whole nother preliminary that we did this morning. The idea is to get you used to it, and then you'll be more comfortable when you do it yourself. And you have a day and a half after this to practice. So try it, you know, tomorrow morning, start your... This kind of stuff you have to start right away and do it for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? If you wait a few days, you'll never do it. You know, it has to start tomorrow morning, okay? So this whole thing we've been talking about, it's useless for me to come here. It's useless for you to come here if you don't do it starting tomorrow morning. You see what I mean? There's not much reason to do it. There's not much reason to have a class if you don't do anything. You know what I mean? So starting tomorrow morning. I mean, and make a decision today. You're going to do it for the rest of your life. Okay. Again, the stakes are very clear. You will die. As you get older, it becomes clearer and clearer that everything else you do is pretty much useless. Everything you work for will disappear soon after you die. You will be forgotten quickly after you die, as will everybody. You can see that with the people you know who died. You're not any different. And you have to do something about it. And the whole crux is whether or not you can see emptiness in this life. You know, if you can, you have a chance. And if you can't, then it's just from chaos to worse, you know. This is the frying pan, and when you die, it's the fire, okay. And that's about how it goes, you know. It's very cruel. And there is no supreme being who can help you like that. There, it doesn't exist, and there's nobody who can pardon you, you know. If they could, they would have done it already, and you never would have had a headache in this life. See what I mean? You can't do it. And when you die, worse things do happen. So there's a motivation for meditation. It's not because I said so, you know. It's not because the book said so. It's not because Lama Sopa said so or His Holiness. It's your life at stake. You must learn to do it. You must do it, you know. And you have to work against the whole Mississippi River of wrong view. You're swimming upstream, you know, against your whole culture, you know. And it's hard. You know, it's not like your boss is going to understand it if you show up an hour late for work, you know. It doesn't work that way. So you're in a very tough position. You know, you're working against a whole civilization that you grew up in. And it's going to be very hard to discipline yourself. But the reason to do it is to see emptiness directly. And the reason to do that is that you're getting older and dying. So every day that passes, you'll look more and more like a genius, you know. I have friends who meet me and 20 years later and say, "You were so smart, you know, you figured it out when you were 20. I said, "I was lucky, you know, half my family died in 1 year, you know, and you can't deny it. You can't say it's not, that's not the way it's going to go." So that's the real reason to meditate and do it tomorrow morning. And the reason is that, to see emptiness. In this room, if two people see emptiness in this life, it will be very, very good on. You know, it will be a big success. And you have to try, okay? You have to give it a good shot, all right? And impossible to see it if you don't meditate deeply. If you can't meditate well, it's totally impossible. And so I put that seed in your mind. Maybe you won't start tomorrow, or you'll start tomorrow and you'll quit after 3 weeks, or you'll start skipping days next week, you know, like that. But I put the seed in your mind. I curse you with that knowledge, you know. You know, sooner or later something terrible will happen in your life. And then you'll get serious about it. And at least then you'll have your notebook and everything, you know. Okay. It's just a question of when, not whether. Okay. I have a close friend who said that I was being a little too fanatical, and I was pressing a little too hard, and things aren't all that bad, you know. And we really don't have to do Dharma all the time. I mean, it's not like an emergency, you know. And gave me, you know, really gave me a dressing down one day. And I said, no, one day you'll see, you know. He got engaged to be married, you know. Everything was looking great. He took his fiance to meet mom. True story. And then on July 16th of this year, his mother, living in a quiet apartment in a quiet small town, somebody broke in and murdered her. Badly, you know, and never found the person, don't know what's going on. Now his viewpoint is adjusting slightly to my fanatical viewpoint, you know. And you see, this is the reality. This is the way this is truth, you know. This is the way your life will go. You don't know how much time you have. You know, his poor mother waited her whole life to see him get married, you know, and then she didn't get to see him get married, you know. And all she was doing was living a quiet little life in a quiet little town, you know. She wasn't doing anything risky. So it's you don't know when it's going to happen, and it will happen, you know. And you have to learn to meditate. You must learn to meditate, okay? And you have to start tomorrow, okay? So we'll do a preliminary, all right? So get in your new excellent meditation position. We're going to do the preliminaries. I'm going to get you on to the same meditation. Actually, it's going to be a breath meditation. And then I'm going to walk around and, while you're meditating, I'll walk around and, you know, if I see you doing anything outside that I can see you can help you with, I'll help you. You have to take care of the inside. All right. So leave me a little room to walk around, okay? Like, I'm not supposed to walk. Too funny, right? In the monastery, they just walk on your laps, you know. But try to make it so I don't have to walk over your book. That's supposed to be very bad luck, to walk over a Dharma book, okay? So, okay. In the monastery, they use an electrical cord, an extension cord. I'll use a flower, okay? Okay, so if I say, like, you know, and I'll whisper, you know, I'll say, move that or move that, and okay? Okay, so start by watching your breath. Again, it's the feeling of your breath on your nostrils. It's a touch thing. Feel the breath passing your nostrils. Okay. now take refuge in. Well, the one we did before is called like a causal refuge. We'll talk about a result refuge, which means try to think of one of the qualities of the three jewels. And what I suggest is think about the quality of an enlightened being, that they have the ability to read your mind and that they are constantly attempting to help you. So take refuge in that fact, that there are beings in the universe, there are beings in this room around you, and they can read your mind, they know your future, and they're working constantly to help you. So take refuge in that. Next is bodhicitta, and think of someone, a different person, who is caught in that cycle. They are having some mental or physical problems or some relationship problems, and they are reacting to it with ignorance, meaning they are reacting to it negatively, and they are creating more of that same problem. They are stuck in the cycle called samsara. That is samsara. And when you stop it, that's nirvana. So we try to imagine somebody who is stuck in that cycle of responding to negative things negatively and creating more negative world around them. Try to think of a good example. You never know for sure that it's for real or if there's some emanation, but from the appearances, choose a person. Next, bring into the room to meditate with you, in front of you, facing you, a holy being, your root lama, or His Holiness the Dalai Lama, or Lama Sopa, or whoever you feel and whoever you can relate to as a holy being. And it's no problem if it comes from your past beliefs like Jesus or something like that, no problem. But somebody that you can meditate with that you perceive as a holy being. Now think of the quality, some good quality of them, of a true enlightened being. And I'd say let's choose the quality of their body, that their body feels perfect. They don't have guts or heart or lungs. It's pure light and no kind of physical pain, total ecstasy all the time. Think of a body like that. And honor it. Next, offer them a gift, something very sweet. Next, think of something negative or you said or something negative you thought in the last 24 hours. Play it back precisely the way you said it or you thought it. And try hard to remember exactly what you said or thought. And we'll do that for about 10 breaths. Now something really, really nice, something sweet that you thought, something sweet that you did in the last 24 hours. And it can be small. That's fine, but that's progress. And be happy about it. Something specific. Next, ask for teachings. Next, think about one of your Dharma brothers or sisters and that has a good influence on you and pray that they stay near you and in your life. That finishes the preliminaries, and you can shift around. I don't want to suggest moving too much, but it's just like correcting, okay? Now I'd like you to take a perfect Vairochana 7-point posture and you watch your breath, and I'll watch you. And I'll walk around and make suggestions to people. I think it's very helpful to have someone to do that for you, because you don't know what you look like from the outside. And I won't be able to do everyone, but I'll wander around and try to help you. So be on your best behavior. Try to sit perfectly. You should really try to sit when you decide, when you go into your deep meditation, go into it and be a tough guy. Okay? Something itches, let it itch. If you meditate for a while, you find out that all those itches just go away after a while. And then they leave this kind of shadow, you know? You like, it feels funny for about 2 minutes, and then it just goes away completely. So first it itches, and then if you don't scratch it, it starts to feel like numb, and then it just goes away. So you don't have to scratch everything that itches, okay? That's a principle of meditation. And then just don't move, okay? Try not to move at all. And if you didn't take your meditation posture right, and it starts to hurt a little bit, don't move. Move, you know, correct it next session. But don't move in this session. You see what I mean? And just forget it. And as you get older, if you don't keep your vows very sweetly, it'll start to hurt more. So you might as well get used to it now. Okay? If you keep your vows well, and you practice well, and if you are very helpful to other people, the feeling in your body will get better and better each year. And you'll feel better and better. And you'll get more and more light and more flexible each year. Okay? All right, here we go. You guys watch your breath, and we'll just do like 10 minutes. I'll go around. If I see somebody with their head on their shoulder, I'll tell them, okay?
Okay, then the Lama in front of you, or the being, ask them to come into you. And you know how to do it, just do it. Then feel them in your heart, the warmth, and then let that spread in your body, golden warmth. And then it comes out of the pores of your body, every little tiny hole in your body, like light rays. And it touches other people and helps them and dedicate it to the other people. And you become like that Lama. Okay, so relax, stretch. The main thing I noticed was what was that? Oh, one thing about meditation, you can't peek at the other people, okay? That doesn't work too well. There's a principle that when you're taking a teaching or especially initiation or you're meditating, imagine you are by yourself, even if you're with 1,000 other people. It's between you and the Lama, you know? And just imagine that there's only 2 people in that room and forget everybody else. You have to get used to that, especially when you take initiations and things like that. It's one-on-one, or you take vows or something like that. It's you and this Lama. And it's very important to think that way and to imagine that way, okay? One good trick is to put the small of your back, push it in a little bit, okay? There's a way, if you get like that, and if you push the small of your back in a little bit and you stick your butt out a little bit, so you're sticking your butt back very slightly. If you do it too much, it hurts, okay? But very slightly, make a little gong gong, it's called in Tibetan, a little shallow here. And as a result, your legs will get pushed out away from your body a little bit, and that's good, okay? So you're sitting, if you sit up straight, stick your butt out a little bit, which forces the small of your back in a little bit. And then, as a result, your legs will be pushed away from your body a little bit, and it's a much more stable position, okay? And the channels, if this particular part is just in slightly, and not in a painful way, you know, not where it hurts, but if it's just very slightly in, and your butt is just a little bit sticking out, the channels run much better. Your meditation will go much better, okay? We're going to cover now what's really the third class. And I've been looking at the homework and realizing I didn't give you half the questions, so sorry. You'll figure it out. All right. Ask one of the older students, and they'll ask me. And, okay. These are called the... the place where you're going to meditate, okay? What about the place where you go to meditate? And that's what we're going to talk about now. I'm going to distinguish between 2 kinds of meditation environments. You know, one is your apartment or your room, and that corner of your room that you used to meditate in. Okay, that's one environment. And in that sense, we're talking about day-by-day meditation of a normal American who has to go to work, you know, a little bit at least. And, you know, this is a daily practice meditation. Everything we've been talking about so far is a daily practice meditation. And we've already described the environment for that. Now we're going to describe the environment of a completely different kind of meditation, and that's a retreat environment. Okay? Retreat could be anything from 24 hours to 3 years, 3 months, 3 days. You know, when you take a tantric initiation, in many tantras, you commit yourself to four intense retreats during your life, mantra retreats. They're called lerung. And I'm going to be mostly talking in terms of a lerung type of retreat where it's 4 to 5 weeks long, okay? Say 4 to 6 weeks long, okay? We're going to do a much more intense program on that. Am I right, Perello? In December, if we can get the house working in Connecticut, okay? So talk to Fran Perello. She's there. You ready? She runs our Godstell Retreat Center. That's in Connecticut. So if there's any way you can get to Connecticut, we'll do a 10-day intensive on how to do a retreat. But I'll give you some of it today. And this is meditation in a retreat environment as opposed to meditation in your bedroom or in your apartment before you go to work, okay? And most of these points are covering that. Anything that's required in a tantric initiation is usually a good idea to do anyway. You know what I mean? Like keeping your book, okay? So this applies to all kinds of meditation also. And these are six qualities of the environment, okay? Here we go. Oh, and what I mean to say is if you're serious about all this stuff, you should probably do four great retreats also. You see what I mean? I think it's a trick. I think it's a lama trick, like so many other things. Tap kepa, skillful means. If you do four, it's like eating Pringles, you know? You'll definitely want to do more, okay? So they're like, you have to do four, you know? And after you do four, you'll be wanting to do them twice a year or something. I think it's a very, very good custom to go away twice a year for at least a month, month to 5 weeks, and do a retreat, okay? I worked in corporate world for 15 years. I know what happens when you go to your boss and ask for 5 weeks off twice a year. They laugh at you, you know? And generally, you have to find a job that can let you do that. It's not easy to find a job like that. It takes time to develop a job like that. You can easily live in the United States on 10 months worth of salary in a job where they dock you and they don't pay you full pay because they know you're going to be gone 2 months a year. And I did that. You know what I mean? I worked in a corporation and I cut a deal with the boss. You know, I said, pay me half. You know, pay me half normal salary. I'll be gone 2 to 3 months a year. You get a good deal. I guarantee you good performance. I guarantee you profits. You'll make lots of money off of me. I'll be more creative. You know, I'll be more intelligent. I'll be clear in my mind. And I did it for him. You know, I really did do it. And I made sure that when I was there, he made a lot of money off me. So then when I go and I say, I'm going on retreat, you know, he says, I'll fire you. So he said, you have to be in the mood. You have to be, say, okay, fire me. Then he says, okay, I won't fire you, but, you know, you know what I mean? Sometimes I really do fire you. But anyway, and what I say is don't do anything drastic. You know, don't go tomorrow and demand 3 months off. Start working on a career that allows you to do 2 to 3 months retreat a year, okay? You have to. You have to, okay? You won't miss the career 6 minutes after you die, okay? Really. At that moment, all that career becomes totally, totally meaningless. And the death will come, you know. So you have to make a decision. I don't say quit your job tomorrow. I say work up slowly and build another career that will allow you to do two long retreats a year, you know, of about a month or something like that. You know, build up some kind of a right livelihood, okay? You're not allowed to be a grub in Buddhism. You're required to have an honest livelihood that doesn't hurt anybody. You're not supposed to wander from Dharma Center to Dharma Center bumming off people, okay? That's not right livelihood. You have to have an honest living that benefits other people and that allows you the time to do what you need to do, because you will die. And you, if you have to choose between one or the other, you know where to go. You know what I mean? So don't do it tomorrow, but keep it, Semla Jakshu in Tibetan, keep it in your heart that you are slowly going to build up another job, and you'll keep your antenna out for this other job, you know, time-sharing job, some kind of job you can get that will feed you sufficiently so you don't have to grub off other people, but definitely you'll have time for your retreats, okay? The other extreme is to not have any job at all, constantly be in anxiety because your credit cards are crazy, you know, constantly be bothering other people, you know, not like that, shouldn't be like that, okay? Should be honest living, modest living, simple life. You know, I rented a room for 23 years in another house, you know, and it's small and it's enough. You don't need more than that. There's a toilet, everything. You know, you don't need much, you know, you really don't need much. So you can live. In America, you can do that. I mean, it's not, doesn't take a genius to, in America, to feed yourself and have a toilet and a little room. And it's enough. You don't need more than that, okay? Okay, here are the environment, especially with regard to a retreat, which now you're going to promise to do. Okay, you don't have to do a lot. Just do four. Okay? Okay. I'll spell the English for people who can't see it. It's Shine, S-H-I, hyphen N-E, Tsok, T-S-O-K, Temba, T-E-N-P-A. Okay? Oh, ten. T-E-N. Shine, as you know, is shamatha. Okay? Perfect concentration. Somebody asked me, what's the difference between shine and tingenzin? You know, what's the difference between shamatha and samadhi? Shine is a kind of samadhi, okay? Shamatha is a kind of samadhi. Shamatha is the best kind of samadhi. So samadhi is more general, and shamatha is really good samadhi. How's that? How do you know when your samadhi reached shamatha? Lu Semgi Dewa Kepa Chen means, Lu means body, Sem means mind. Dewa Kepa Chen means feels great when you meditate, okay? Your mind is like zoom. Anything you want to concentrate on, boom, 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 you know? I call it popcorn. Your mind is like pop, you know, boom, boom. Everything you want to concentrate on, no problem. And every time you sit down to meditate, your body feels like feathers, you know? It feels really great to meditate, you know? Is that the goal of meditation? No. You break a bodhisattva vow if you think so. It was such a temptation to think like that, they made a bodhisattva vow about it. Don't mistake that for spiritual goals, okay? That will wear off as you get older, okay? All right? Don't concentrate on that too much. It's a great sign. It's an important sign. It means you're ready to see emptiness. But it ain't emptiness, and it doesn't help you that much, okay? It's nice. It's a side effect. Okay. Shine means shamatha. Tsok means all the causes, all the conditions that you need to gather together. Okay. Tsok. Temba means finding them and using them. Okay. Taking advantage of them. Okay. So shine ki tsok temba, you could translate as something like finding all the proper conditions for achieving the highest kind of meditation, the deepest kind of meditation, called shamatha, okay? The English letters here are D-O, Do, D-E, De, G-Y-E-N, Gen, okay? Say, Do De Gen.
Do De Gen.
Do means sutra. Dode means the collection of sutras, and Gen means ornament. In Sanskrit, it's Sutra Alamkara. This is a book that was written by Asanga, taking dictation from Maitreya in Maitreya's heaven in about 350 AD. Okay, and that's going to be the source for the first condition of meditation. Okay, I just noticed on your homework it says, you know, where did Tsongkhapa get this stuff? And you're going to say, oh, he got it from Maitreya. What book did he use? Do De Gen. What's that in English? Ornament of the Sutras. Okay. Yeah.
Did you say that was
Yeah, there's going to be six qualities of the environment. And especially the first one has come from that book, from the Sutta Alankara by, you know, dictated by Maitreya to Asanga. Okay. Say, Timbe. You. Timbe. You. Tumba or Timbe means conducive. By the way, those of you who can't see, it's T-U-N-P-A-Y and then Y-U-L. Okay, Timbe U. Tumba means very conducive to meditation. Very conducive to meditation. Very, very much a good place to meditate. You means a place or a, it can mean object, but often it means a place. Okay, so this is a good place to meditate. And there are going to be like, I don't know how many is it, five different qualities. This is very galupa, right? We're going to have outlines and outlines and outlines. And these are good for shargom. Shargom means a review meditation. You can go down through the meditation like that. You go down through all steps, and it's a very nice meditation to do. It makes you a good teacher if you're going to teach other people. You know, there's six of these, five of these. If you list them and it comes out one short, you know, okay? So we'll go to A, right? I'll run it by you again. The whole subject of this afternoon is all the conditions you have to get ready to get to shamatha. That's called shine tsokten. Okay, that's the whole subject this afternoon. In that, there'll be six different things that you need. The first one is called, you need a good place to meditate. That in itself has five different qualities. Okay, so we're like on 1A, okay? How about I put 1A? Okay. If you can't see it, it's N-Y-E-L-A-W-A. Say, Nye Lawa. Nye Lawa. Nye means to find. Lawa means easy. Nye lawa means easy to find. Easy to find what? All the stuff you need physically. Groceries. Clothes. Heater. You know, stuff like that. There are certain things you need when you go into meditation. Those of you who have done a month or a 6-week meditation, especially if you're out in a cave somewhere, you get very good at this. Like, the first time you forget matches. You know, and so you're out in a cave for 5 weeks without any matches or something. You know, I mean, you get good. It's like a Boy Scout checklist, you know. And I encourage you, when you do your retreats, take a notebook with you. And over the years, you will develop a list of things you have to take, you know. Like straws, plastic straws to make the fine points on the dormas, you know. And if you forget it, it's a real hassle. You know, stuff like that. Little weird things that you wouldn't think of. You know, and as you get more experienced, you'll get better and better at it. So you have to find a place that everything is comfortable, okay? I tried, you know, I grew up in Arizona. I used to go to Sycamore Canyon and take some natural substances. And we used to have a great time there. You know, hike in 5 miles, spend a couple of days, come out, saw all these things, you know. And 20 years later, I said, that might be a neat place to meditate. I'll do this cave thing, you know. And I packed a big pack, and I walked in 5 miles. I found this cave that I used to know about. And I tried to meditate there, and it was a disaster, you know. It don't work, okay, why? It's hot, it's dirty, there's bugs crawling all over you. The animals at night are loud. They make all kinds of noises. All these critters are running around behind you, and you know, try to keep your eyes closed, you know, when you hear this thing crawling around in your cave, you know. And snakes. This big snake visited me and stuff like that. And what it means is, I mean, you need a normal, quiet, comfortable place. And, you know, the cave thing is very sexy and it sounds very cool, but you actually cannot meditate there very well. You need a nice, quiet cabin somewhere, has a nice bathroom, has a shower, you know. Everything should be conducive to meditation, okay? And that's, you should have enough food, not too much food. Everything should be there that you need. If it's cold, you need a heater, stuff like that. Don't be a hero. you know, you're not trying to impress everybody. That's another wrong view in Buddhism. It's called which means to think that there's some spiritual benefit to causing yourself trouble. You know, like, you know, beating yourself up, and that somehow makes you a more spiritual person or something. You're supposed to be normal. You know, the place should be normal. It's not too cold, not too hot. Toilet works. Everything's normal. And it's quiet, and you can meditate very nicely there. So that's the idea of a good meditation place. Okay, that means, Nye Lawa means easy to find all the things that you need. Groceries, clothing, everything else, okay? And frankly, it's an investment, okay, to go into meditation for a month. There's a certain $100 of, you know, $500 of groceries, $20 of toilet paper. You know, you have to think like that. And you have to save your money. I mean, I'm talking very practically. Unless you've got a sugar daddy or something, you have to financially get your act together before you go into retreat, because it's a little expensive. Normally, you have to rent someplace. You have to have groceries. You're going to need to fly somewhere, maybe. And during the year, you should collect money for that, okay? If you have trouble seeing the board, it's NE SANGWA. Ne Sangwa. Say Ne Sawa.
Sawa.
Ne Sawa.
Ne Sawa.
In Tibet, this meant a safe place. Meaning, in many places in Tibet, if you went out and meditated in the countryside, it would be dangerous. There are like robbers, wild animals, things like that. Again, the cave thing. If it would be endanger you, then don't stay there. Could also refer to people who are going to hassle you in general. You know, like I've met people who tried to do their retreats in their house, and they asked my Lama, is it okay? And he, knowing that they wouldn't do it unless they did do it in their house, say, it's okay to do it in your house. But it's not really, okay? People are going to be wandering around, banging on the door. People are going to be bothering you. It doesn't work usually, okay? If you don't have any other choice, it's okay. But if it's dangerous in the sense of, you know, people in the house who aren't going to respect that retreat, and they're going to keep banging on the door, or bothering you, or making noise, then you can't do it there. It doesn't qualify as a nesangwa, okay? If you can't see the board, it's S-A-S-A, and then sangwa, S-A-N-G-W-A. Okay. Say sa,
sawa,
sa,
sawa.
Sa again means place. I mean, you can call the first one good place. You can call this one good location or something. It's the same thing in Tibetan. Sangwa here means nice. This is the sang in Lobsang, for example. Okay, a good location. All right, it's the same thing really. Okay, but it has a different meaning. Okay. It means that the place should be conducive physically, in the sense that it shouldn't be too hot, it shouldn't be too cold, it shouldn't be too humid. You know, anything that would make you sick. All right. Big enemy of meditation is, one of the worst is catching a cold. Okay, you can imagine trying to breathe properly while this drip is coming out of your nose. Okay, or you're coughing or something. Okay. A meditator has to select a place which is very, very conducive and very, very easy to stay healthy there. You know what I mean? Like, it's not too cold, not too hot, like that. It's not like a place where you're likely to get sick. Okay? A lot of people I know, so I'm going to do retreat out in the country somewhere, you know, and they don't go check the place out. They rent it, they get out there, and the roof is leaking. You know, I had a student like that last month. They spent half the retreat trying to fix the roof, you know. And then they got wet and they got a cold. If you catch a cold, you might as well go home. You know, like a meditator has to be very careful not to catch a cold, you know. And you have to do anything you have to do to stay warm, okay. So it's no, like, heroic thing to go in a house that doesn't have proper heating and then expose yourself to the chance of catching a cold. Once you catch a cold, you can't meditate, okay. It doesn't work. So you have to be very careful. That also, getting out to the retreat place, getting set up, should not be stressful. You see what I mean? Because then you'll get sick. You might get sick when you start retreat, okay? And retreat takes a lot of energy. Retreat takes a lot of strength. So what's very typical is that people push the retreat down into the minimum days. You know, I can do 14.3 days. You know, I have to be back on the plane, red-eye back to New York. I have to be at the office the next morning. And they usually don't get everything ready till the night before. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning. The flight leaves at 5:30. And they still haven't paid all their bills. And, you know, don't try not to rush everything up to the last minute and then jump on the plane and then expect that you're going to meditate them the next morning. It doesn't work like that, okay? Take a week and a half to start clearing up all your life. It's a very good experience. It's like dying twice a year, you know? Pay all your bills. Say goodbye to all your friends. Don't stay up all night the night before. Be ready. You know, get packed a day and a half before. And then everything is ready, and then you just go on retreat, and you're fresh, and you start your retreat nice. Most people are exhausted. They've calculated the mantras down to a certain hour. They get out the next day. They fly back to New York. They're at work the next morning. Don't do that. Leave some gap time, because the stress will leave you more likely to get sick. Okay? If you get sick in meditation, then it's worthless. Another thing is to take a lot of medicines into your retreat place. Okay? Like, I go through the aisles at Walmart, you know, and I just pull things off, you know, everything you might need, because you don't want to talk to anybody, okay? You don't want to meet anybody. So, aspirin, Aleve, you know, what's that stuff? Neosporin, I have a whole list, you see? I rarely get diarrhea, but just on the case that you might, Lomotil, you know what I mean? You make a whole list of things that you might need. And I don't think in the last 5 or 6 retreats I've ever used any of this stuff. You know what's really good is the orange aspirin, the kids' aspirin, the children's aspirin, St. Joseph's. Yeah, because when you're meditating, your body's much more sensitive. And you won't need a Tylenol, okay? If you need anything, it's going to be a very gentle thing or something like that. And all that. You have to think about what might happen, you know, if you cut yourself or you get sick or something like that. I got really sick in one retreat in the Arizona desert, and I couldn't get outside the door. I crawled on the floor. I had to go poo-poo. I was so sick I couldn't get up. And you have to think ahead how to handle that. You know, you have to get all your medicines ready and like that. Okay, that's one thing you have to do. The environment should be safe. That's what sasangwa means, okay? In English, it's DROKSANGWA. Okay. Say, drop. Sawa. Drop. Sawa. Drop means companions or buddies, okay? Sawa means good. Goodies, good friends, okay? This has several meanings. I mean, you're going to need a support staff. Okay, when you do retreat, you need a support staff. The good should be good people. They should believe in what you're doing. They should, you know, preferable. I'm talking, if you can't find someone who believes in what you're doing, who wants to cook for you, then find somebody who doesn't believe in what you're doing, who wants to cook for you, okay? But I'm talking ideal situation, okay? Try to find somebody who has the same kind of energy and who will devote themselves to your retreat, okay? You need somebody on the outside that can help you and support you. It's better if you don't have to cook for yourself, okay? Meditating on what you're going to have for dinner, you know, you don't want to go through that. You don't want to have to think about that. The idea is to eliminate things to think about. So try to find somebody that will cook for you during your retreat, okay? It should be someone who understands what you're doing and who appreciates what you're doing, okay? Normally, when you go into a long retreat, you should have a whole list of other support, like a doctor, a good doctor that you might need. A lama who you can call if you're having a problem, or send a note to if you're having a problem, okay? Because problems do come up during retreats, and you don't want to break the retreat. You know, you want to stay in retreat. So you want to be able to pass a note out to ask a question. A good plumber helps a lot, okay? Stuff like that, you know what I mean? You have to think ahead and have all these people. Very, very preferable if you can have a lama nearby, so that if you have a serious problem, you can consult them and find out what to do. you get certain wind problems or anxiety attacks during meditation. This is very common. And it's good to have a lama nearby to help you. I understand that Lama Sopa might be doing a long-term retreat this year, in February or something like that. I think it's a fantastic opportunity. If you could, you know, get going, get into that, it would be really nice. That's like perfect circumstances, you know, where a very highly qualified lama is nearby. And that's very important. Should you or should you not do retreat with other people? The best retreats, I think, I mean, very highly desirable if you can do it completely alone. Okay, don't see anybody. Don't talk to anybody. Okay, the whole thing in isolation. It makes the retreat much more powerful. If you're really going to do it seriously, you get a fairly decent place and go to Goodwill and buy some sheets and tape up all the doors and windows, you know what I mean? And stay in there for 5 weeks, okay? It's very, very good for your meditation, okay? You just decide, I'm not going to see anybody, you know? And not to see another living being is very good in retreat, you know? Not even out the window, you know, tip up the windows and stay in there. And it's very, very, it makes the retreat experience very, very powerful. Talking to other people, seeing other people, even if you don't talk to them, having relationships with other people. And also it's very good to stay celibate during your retreat, okay? There's a power or there's an energy to that that's very, very desirable. So you keep all your energy inside, you see what I mean? And if you can do that during your whole retreat, it's very, very powerful. It makes your retreat much more powerful. Not to touch another person, not to talk to another person, not to have any kind of sexual activity at all is very desirable. And it gets all your energy focused inside. And it makes the energy very, very powerful. Okay. Sometimes great lamas, Jetsun Kapa, they did retreats with other people. And that's okay, but there should be certain ground rules. You know, the person should be very, very sensitive to you, and you should be very, very sensitive to them. And you can split the cooking. You can do your prayers together. It can be very powerful to do retreat with a very small group of people if all tuned into the same thing. But if one of the group starts to have a problem, or they're unhappy, or they start acting weird, it ruins the retreat for the group. So you have to be very sure to check out the people that you're going to go and retreat with. It should be people you've known for a long time. They should be equally serious as you. Before you start the retreat, decide on the rules of the retreat, okay? Like, we aren't going to talk, and then really stick to it. I've been in retreats where we all agreed not to talk, and then 3 days later we're like... and then it's just the whole feeling of the retreat dissolved, you know, the whole feeling of isolation. And so we ended up talking with our hands, you know, I want a chocolate bar, you know. You know, and the whole energy leaves the retreat, you know. And then if one person's like unhappy or having a problem, the whole energy comes down, you know. So you have to try to find a group of people who are very, very into it and who very much understand it. It's also very important that you're trained properly before the retreat, you know. I know a lot of people who say, I'm going on a retreat in September, you know, and you say, oh, that's great, what are you going to do? I don't know. And it's already like August 31st, you know, and you're like, you have to prepare, you have to go get some instructions on what you're going to do your retreat about, you know. You don't want to waste the time. It's very, very hard to get the money. It's impossible to get the vacation time. It's hard to find a place. It's hard to fly there. It's hard to do everything. And then you get there and you don't know what to do. You know, you need instruction on how to do a retreat. It's very hard to meditate for 18 hours a day. You know, I mean, almost anything you can think of in about half an hour. So how are you going to spend 18 hours, you know, on your meditation cushion? What are you going to think about? What are you going to visualize? You know, Mucha Dhamma Bhadra, one of our great lineage lamas, he said, go into retreat with a big... ready with all your instructions, you know. Don't just show up and retreat and think you're going to have a good retreat. He says, if you just have one brief meditation that some lama has taught you, oh, visualize this white guy in your head. Let this stuff come down from him into your body. You know, feel happy. Try that for 18 hours a day. You know what I mean? It's not enough. He said, you're going to get bored. If you're a normal person, you're going to get bored. Have some variety. You know, have like three or four, have your practices ready. before you go into retreat, and study the practices seriously before you go into retreat. Okay, we'll take a break there, and then we'll do just a little bit when we come back. Okay, so take a little break.
Okay, Joshi Medota, we rabbi shini deya bari, Sangheshi du mede uagi, Tokun handa shina chapasho. Guru Rana Mandala Kamne Yataya.
I have to do a book. Those of you who know about the book, and if you don't, we'll talk about it next weekend, but it's really good to do one before you do something important, and then it makes it go right. Say Lekpa Denpa. Lekpa Denpa. Lekpa means good. It's what the Buddha said to his student in the Heart Sutra. Lekso, lekso, rikipu dedeshin o, rikipu dedeshin de, jitakyuki denpa deshin du. Right on, right on, okay? Good. Okay? Denpa means to possess something. So Lekpa Denpa means great, okay? Great in what sense? Okay, by the way, the reason they have weird names is that this is how it comes in Maitreya's text. So he's using the words as they come in Maitreya's text. Okay, it means that during the day you don't have interruptions from people. Okay, that's what the text says. But I'd say day and night. Okay, you just don't have interruptions from other people. You're not meeting other people. Every time you meet another person in a retreat, the energy of the retreat goes down. Okay, you should try to stay in solitude. It's much, much more powerful. And then the second kind of Lekpa Denpa is quiet. The place is quiet. Applies to all meditation. The greatest of meditation, aside from too many cookies just before, is noise. Okay? Noise ruins meditation. So you have to do whatever you have to do to be quiet. That's another reason to do your meditation early in the day. I know a lot of people who are Buddhists and their family is not Buddhist, so they try to wake up early before the rest of the family is up. And they're in meditation, and that's the quiet time of the day. That's like the only quiet time you can get. So you have to try to do what you can do to make it quiet. Some of our monks in New York, they use earplugs. Because in New York, I mean, you can't, like, city never sleeps, you know. So some of them use earplugs. I personally find them distracting. But some of the monks say they're really, really good for them. So I think that's an optional thing. You know, try them, and you might find that it's very good. But in general, try to find a place which is totally silent. And that's the main reason to go away for retreat. You know, try to find a place out in the country that's totally quiet. In America, in our economic level, there's always empty cottages not being used. There's always empty houses not being used. You know what I mean? You can always find something. You have to be persistent and try to find something out in the middle of nowhere that's going to be quiet. And go check it out. Quiet also refers to natural sounds. You know, you read these nice poetry things about the monk meditating near the tinkling water of the stream. That's not what the scriptures say. You know, the scriptures say if you want to ruin your meditation, do it near an ocean where you can hear the waves crashing. I had one student did it near the Delaware Bay, and it was like this lapping sound and drove him crazy, you know. You don't want that. You don't want the sound of a river or a ocean or the wind blowing through the trees. You want total silence, you know. You got to time things right. I did a retreat in Arizona one time during cicada months, you know. And it was crazy. It was like terrible, you know. So you have to know the environment where you're going to be meditating. Did you have a question?
There are many retreat establishments where they do
Fran said, you know, there's opportunities you can have to do group retreats of 10 people, 15 people. And she asked me, did I think it was less effective than solitary retreats? To be honest, you know, I have one of those retreat centers. She runs it. And to be honest, it's not as effective. And I'll be quite frank with you. You know, much better if you can find a place where you can stay in solitude. To be honest, you know, it's not bad to do a group retreat, especially if you don't have discipline. You know, it would help you. But inevitably, you're like talking. Inevitably, you're thinking about somebody picking their nose or burping next to you. Or I was going crazy. I met a guy who did a 3-year retreat. You know, nice guy. I said, "How did it go?" He said, "Oh, it was great, but once a day we all met together and did our prayers together, and I decided I hate this one other guy." And so for 3 years, you know, everything he did, every time he slurped his tea, you know, every time he yawned, you know, every time he dropped something, I would get this resentment towards him, you know what I mean? And it ruined his 3-year retreat. It's kind of amazing to think that. But solitude is much better, okay? And to be frank, you know, if you can do it, it's good to attend a few group retreats if there's a leader who's good at that practice. And then you learn the practice well, you do a couple of group retreats, and then go do it on your own is ideal. Okay, totally on your own without any contact and maybe no hope of contact. You know, go out somewhere, have somebody drive you out there. You know, it's a 20-mile walk back to town. It's actually quite good. When you are strong enough to do it, when you are experienced enough to do it by yourself. The first few long retreats you do, you should have the ability to contact a lama or something like that. Telephones are a disaster. You know, have them taken out. Frankly, if the house doesn't have electricity, it's better. Okay? There's some kind of, I'm not a new age type of person, but I have meditated many, many retreats, and there's something about a house that doesn't have electricity that works better. And I don't know what it is, but you know, the light is all natural and everything you're doing is natural, and there's nothing humming or buzzing, or, you know, do a retreat with a noisy refrigerator, you go crazy. You know, and don't forget that after 2.5 weeks, it's about exactly 16 days for most people, everything will be 10 times louder. You know, so if you have a slightly buzzing refrigerator, 10 days later, it sounds like a Mack truck running through your house, you know. So don't forget your ears are going to get much more sensitive as time goes on. So I've just found it better to have everything turned off. And if you do have a house with a refrigerator or something like that, just unplug it while you're meditating. And then plug it. Remember to plug it back in after you. Otherwise, all that ice cream melts all over the place. That's another thing. Okay, we finished the place, and now we're going to talk about some kind of inner conditions, okay? It's Dupa Chunguch, DupaChunguwa. Say Dupa Chunguwa. Dupa Chunguwa. Dupa means your wants or things that you need. Chunguwa means not much, okay? So this is a principle that comes from the Abhidhamma Kosha, 350 AD, Vasubandhu, Master Vasubandhu. And the point is that, especially when you're doing retreat, reduce your needs to nothing, you know? All you really need to do a retreat is your cushion, some crackers, some water, some butter, you know? I mean, eat light. Just don't have many things, okay? Eliminate in your life as many of your possessions as you can. We were talking about the idea of being a monk or a nun or being ordained, and that the American perception of it is like 90% the red suit, the length of the hair, and the fact that you can't have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. And if you ask an American, what does it mean to be a monk or nun? This is the three things that come up in their mind. You know what I mean? And that's all. But the real meaning of to be a monk or a nun is much more profound than that. It's that you don't own anything. You don't own a house. You don't own any possessions. You're only allowed really to own two sets of robes. You know, and your umbrella and your tuck, which means water strainer, so you don't kill the bugs in the water when you drink it. You know, and these are the, and a porpa, which is a small bowl which you use for water, milk, Cheerios, everything. You know, one bowl. And you're not allowed to own food. You're not allowed to own money. You're not allowed to have own people, meaning a wife or a husband or kids. Totally free of possessions, okay? That's the real meaning of, like 90% of the vows relate to that. What's the point of that? What's the goal of that? What's that supposed to do for you? Do you have a refrigerator? What's it look like? How big is it? What's in it today? You know, if I ask you, 99% of people in this room can tell me, yeah, I have one. It's like about this big. You know, if my friend didn't polish off all the ice cream, there's probably some in there. You know, you know the contents. It takes brain cells to store all that information. You see what I mean? Every time you pick up a new possession or a new relationship, you have to keep all the information somewhere. It fills up part of your brain. You know, it takes up precious brain space. And the point of being ordained is that you just eliminate all that. You know, you got your whole brain to use for other stuff. Every time you add a possession, every time you add a new shirt or a new pair of shoes or a new relationship, a certain percentage of your mind, you know what, 0.05%, just got dedicated to tracking where is it? Where is that person today? You know, where am I keeping those shoes if I want to wear them? You know, and the idea is that you just eliminate it down to nothing. Dupa Chinwa is a principle in the Abhidharma for meditators of reducing your wants to nothing. You know, as close to nothing as you can get. And it's very, very satisfying. You know, it's very, very satisfying. I've had lamas, you know, just encourage me to just get rid of all my money. You know what I mean? Just get rid of it. You know, and it was a hassle, you know. It was like trying to get rid of it, you know. And the problem with money is the more you give away, the more you get back. And it gets to be a real hassle. And like that, try to reduce your needs to nothing, okay? Say chokshe means satisfaction, contentment. And the meaning of it is to be happy with whatever you get. You know, somebody gives you a lousy room at LMB, you say, okay, that's okay, I don't need much. You know, the bed isn't quite what you wanted. That's okay, I don't need more than that. You know, you didn't quite get the dinner that you were hoping for. It's okay, I don't mind. It's just like this total don't care what you get or what you don't get. You're happy with whatever you get. You know, someone gives you this or that, that's enough for me. Okay, it's just this decision that's enough for you. And these two are very famous in the Abhidharma. Okay, Abhidharma Kosha, Vasubandhu. Say Duchung, Chokshe. Duchung, Chokshe. It's like a mantra in the monastery. Duchung Chokshe. I don't need nothing, and whatever I get is fine with me. Okay, and live by that. And then your mind is open and freed to meditate, okay? All of the brain cells are available for other stuff. And they don't have to be tracking and remembering where your stuff is, you know, okay? And whatever you get is fine. It's a very, very beautiful way to live, okay? And it's the essence of the ordained life, okay? Say jamang. Pang. J-A-M-A-N-G-P-A-N-G. Jamang. Pang. Okay. Jamang means lots of activities, doing lots of things. Pang means give it up. Okay. This refers specifically to a retreat. Okay. Like when you're in retreat, start about 2 weeks before you go into retreat and start to close down your life. Okay. Pay all your bills, take care of all the business you have, put all your projects on hold, finish what you can, stop the rest, as if you were going to die, okay? Just design everything that the day you go into retreat, there's nothing left to do anymore. And if you died, everything would be taken care of. It's like closing up your affairs for a month, okay? And it's a very nice exercise, you know, if you work at a in a career, a normal career, it's like dying twice a year. If you do two retreats a year, which I recommend, it's very, very nice to just close up your life. You get used to it after a while. Okay, people know they're not going to hear from you for a month and a half. All the stuff is taken care of. You get very good at it. And there's sort of this frightening realization that they don't need you and you don't need them, really. And the world will go along quite well without you. Okay, it's kind of a depressing, okay? It's fine, just give it all up. And in retreat, don't try to do anything else. Do not take any side project with you. Do not take any other little study to do. Ideally, don't take any books at all, even Dharma books, okay? Reading any other kind of book is like talking. You might as well have a person there and talk to them if you're going to read a book, okay? Whatever instructions you need for the retreat, you should take care of before you go on the retreat, okay? And even Dharma books, and I'm telling you from experience, you know, I love Dharma books. I spent my whole life collecting them. We've put 2,500 of them into computer discs. I spend my whole day staring at them. I love them. I have a love affair with them. But when you go on retreat, know what the instructions are before you go in. Have a book with you in case you forget some detail or something. But it's more powerful if you don't open the book. To tell you the truth, you know, the retreat is much more powerful because it's like someone speaking to you. And you hear them speaking to you. So it's more powerful if you have prayers to do, memorize them. If you have instructions that you need, remember them, okay? Have the book as a backup, okay? I'm not saying you don't take it with you if you forget how to do something, but take care of all of that in the 6 months before retreat. Start training yourself what to do, what to think, and when you go into retreat, everything is ready, okay? That's giving up a lot of activities. We'll talk more about it in a general sense in your whole life. You know, we're going to talk in another Tuesday about living a lifestyle which reflects these principles. Okay. Now, supposedly as a bodhisattva, now we're making a distinction between like a monk or a nun and a bodhisattva. Okay, monks and nuns are supposed to keep their activities few. It's a principle of being ordained that you don't do much and you don't own anything, okay? Like, I can't own a piece of cloth for more than 9 days. Gushachu Pangdang. That's the name of the vow. I'm sorry, 10 days, okay? On the 10th day, if I find a big piece of cloth and I keep it more than 10 days, I've broken my monk's vows. Yeah, I can't even own a piece of cloth, much less a house or extra shoes or stuff like that. Cannot own that. Supposed to keep my hair down, you know, if I'm in the monastery, this long, if I'm out of the monastery, this long, okay? So what... Then how does that jive with the Bodhisattva vow? Bodhisattva vow says if you have an opportunity to help somebody else, you need to take all that stuff and use it. And if it would freak people out that your head is shaved and you got to go to work, then you don't shave your head. You grow it out a little bit so you look normal, okay? How does that jive? You see what I mean? How does that jive with your ordained vows? And for this you have to study Jetsun Kapa's presentation on the Bodhisattva vows and Asanga's presentation. And the idea is that certain vows, like drinking alcohol, there's never a benefit to anybody else from drinking it. You know what I mean? You can be in a bar and trying to relate to the other guys, but you can dump the beer as you're talking. You know what I mean? You can do that, okay? That vow, you cannot touch it. You cannot drink a single drop of alcohol, okay? But what about cloth, you know? Suppose I have these 23 refugee centers where I'm helping refugees in India and other countries. Somebody gives me a warehouse full of cloth. What am I supposed to do if I can't unload it within 10 days? You know, do I take it or not? If you have taken bodhisattva vows, you must take it. You can, and you have to keep it for a year if you have to keep it for a year. And you have to use money if it would benefit other beings. And you have to get a job if it would benefit. If you have a debt and you're ordained, you're allowed to take a job. If you have to help the other monks in the monastery and they're dying of tuberculosis or something, the bodhisattva vow says you must go get a job. okay, and you must handle money, you must invest it, etc. And Jetsam Kapa's text says not only do you not break the vow, you actually protect the vow. And not only do you not collect it, there's this theory, do you collect a little bad karma and there's a big good karma? And he says, no way, you're collecting a huge good karma. Okay, when an ordained person who cannot keep a small piece of cloth for more than 10 days is offered a warehouse of cloth, and he uses this example, and you have to store it for a year before you can ship it over to India, do it, or you break your bodhisattva vows. And if you do it, you collect an intense and a huge good karma. Okay, so what it means is that when you're strong enough as a bodhisattva, you should be jamang. Okay, you better be like Lama Sopa with 5,000 projects going on. You see what I mean? You know, suppose Lama Sopa came out tomorrow and said, you know, it says jamang pan, don't do too many things, I can't see any students anymore. You can imagine what it would be like. You know what I mean? So you have to temper this with those instructions of Jetsam Kapa. It says clearly, Jetsam Kapa, when he gets to here, he says, by the way, if you're on the Bodhisattva track, Jamang Bang means something else. In retreat, you lower your activities to one thing, which is your meditation, and you never do anything else. Outside a retreat, a good Bodhisattva is working as hard as they can on as many different things as they can, if it does not disturb their practice, you see, and that so that becomes a matter of your own personal ability, your capacity. If you have the capacity to do your practice well and do other things for other people, you have to, okay, and you have to constantly seek to build up that capacity, okay. Then he says, don't overreach your capacity, okay. Don't think that because you're a bodhisattva, you have to do 10,000 things and do them all badly, and you can't concentrate, and your meditation is lousy, and you're not able to do your practices. So, big difference between a Hinayana monk and nun, and a Bodhisattva monk and nun, and a Tantric monk and nun. And those are all different ways of living. Okay, and the same applies to you. So, Jamang Pang in this case means, in meditation, when you're in retreat, drop everything else. Absolutely drop everything else. When you come out of retreat, and if you're under bodhisattva way of life, maybe you should be busy in a way which you can handle and which you can control and which is not ruining your practice. Okay, and that's a advice of Jetsam Kapa. Okay, in his Shunglam, which is in the first volume of his collected works. Okay, how to keep your bodhisattva vows. He goes into that in great detail. Okay. Just for the monks and nuns, I mean, there's a thing in there that says, should you wear your robes all the time or not? And he says, absolutely, you have to wear your robes. It says, Tuyota Meo Dhamma Magyopa. It's Nyepa Gyada Chunyikin Nangsen. It's one of the 112, for a monk, 112 minor vows. You know, you must wear your robes all the time. And then it says, the text says, but if there's a war or something, like if your palace is getting attacked by the Chinese and you have to sneak out, it's okay to put on kampa clothes, okay? Which His Holiness did, right? And that's fine. It says, if your life is in danger for this many days, you can, I think it's 6 days, I'm not sure, I think it's 6 days, you can wear layman's clothes until you get to the Indian border, and then you should put your robes back on, you know? And then there's a line that I'll never forget, my Lama taught it to me. He says, but if your rude Lama says it would be beneficial for sentient beings, to not wear them the rest of your life, you know, like to dress up like a layman and go to work for the rest of your life to help sentient beings, that's fine, okay, no problem, okay, that's the Vinaya, okay. Okay, number five. Say it, Sutram Tapa. In English, it's T-S-U-L, T-R-I-M, D-A-K-P-A. Sutra means your lifestyle, ethical way of living, okay? Maintaining an ethical way of life. Dhapa means very pure, a very pure ethical way of life. Okay? There's another text. Maybe I'll try to print it out for you, but it's a poem that Jetsun Kapa wrote to one of his students. And the student asked him, what's the most important thing for meditation? And this is the single most important thing, okay? So now, here's the guts of the whole 10 days, okay? The 10 classes. You want to know the most important thing for your meditation. Really, the key to have successful meditation is keep your vows pure, okay? Keep your behavior pure all day long, okay? What does that mean? No killing, no stealing, no sexual misconduct, no lying, no divisive talk, no harsh words, no idle gossip, no craving other people's things, no ill will towards other people, and no wrong views. I mean, these are the 10 basic things. If you want to meditate, your mind is a karmic result. Okay? When you go into your mind and you think about, you listen to the thoughts coming in your mind, this is a result of karma. You see? It's not like you are having those thoughts. Those thoughts are happening to you. So where are these thoughts coming from? Your karma. Like, it's easy to see that if you catch a cold, it's karma, right? You must have hurt somebody before. If you get cancer, it's karma. You must have killed bugs or something. You know what I mean? But I think what people don't get so often is that what you hear in your mind all day long, the conversation going on in your mind all day long, is nothing but a result of your past activities. You see what I mean? It's karma. You see? Whether or not you have a good meditation depends on only one thing, your past karma. If you're able to keep your mind still, if you're able to keep your mind in a pure and very, very high degree of clarity, crystal clear, intense, deep concentration, there's really only one reason it's happening to you, and that's because you've taken care of other people and you haven't harmed other people. You've kept your morality. For a bodhisattva practitioner, that means you've been very, very strict never to harm another person, okay? And you've done all that you can to help other people. And if you're a tantrika bodhisattva, monk or nun or other, you've done all the things necessary to get your rear end enlightened very, very quickly. You know, you've used all the most powerful methods and you're keeping them very, very strictly and purely. And then, to tell you the truth, that's the only way to have a good meditation. Okay? Every time you make an unauthorized phone call at work, you know, every time you spill something on the gomba floor and just leave, you know, every time you feel a little jealous about somebody else, every time you ignore somebody who needs you, you know, and for those of you who've had tantric initiations, your laziness about your tantra, you know, the fact that you're not going for it full tilt to the best of your ability at every given moment is ruining your meditation. You will never be able to meditate well, okay? And if you understand tantra, there's a reason for that, okay? Every time you get jealous of somebody, something happens to your channels. Every time you feel irritated at somebody, something happens to your channels. Every time somebody needs your help and you ignore them, no matter who it is, something happens to your channels. When something happens to your channels, the mind cannot operate fully. Then there's some kind of choke on the channels. You will not be able to meditate. So if people come to me and say, I've tried to meditate for 5 years. I've tried to meditate for 10 years. Nothing amazing happened to me. I don't know why nothing's happening to me. One reason, you're not keeping your vows, okay? You're not keeping your bodhisattva way of life and your tantric way of life and your pratimoksha way of life purely, okay? And that's the ultimate reason why anybody fails in meditation, period, okay? Clean up your act, okay? Does anybody in this room murder people on a regular basis, you know? Does anybody in this room embezzle all the money of their company on a regular basis, you know? Does anybody in this room commit adultery every night with someone's wife or husband, you know? It's not like that. I'm talking about the little actions that you do all day long that a normal person does. Why are you a normal person? You know, it's because you do these little things. And you'll stay a normal person until you stop them. I mean, if you want to be a yogi, if you want to be a tantrika, if you want to be able to fly in the sky and become a tantric angel in this lifetime, you have to change something. Something has to change. And if you want to go into these, you know, 26 levels of the 13th meditation on emptiness, which you can't even imagine right now, your morality must become absolutely perfect and beautiful. By the way, it's also the thing that will make you happiest in your life. You know, and I'm not talking Billy Graham morality. I hate the word morality. You know, I don't like, oh, you're evil, you know. I caught you smoking the other day, you know. And, you know, not like that. It's not for other people. It's if you want to reach these deep, deep spiritual experiences, if you want to see all those things that all the books, Milarepa stuff, ever wrote about, you must know your vows, and you must keep them completely, happily, joyfully pure, you know, and help other people all the time. And then suddenly you'll be having these intense meditation experiences, you know. And if you're not having them, it's almost definitely that's the problem, okay? It's not your posture, it's not the temperature, okay? It's not, you know, whether you're in a good house or not. Frankly, it's your level of your vows, you know. And if you don't do that well, there'll always be some kind of obstacle to meditating, and you'll never meditate well, okay? And they're not like, that stuff's not fun to do anyway, you know what I mean? And keeping all those vows nicely, keeping track of them all day long, you know, keeping the book, which we'll talk about, it just makes you very, very happy. And all the people around you start benefiting. And this incredible thing starts happening. All the people around you become very happy. You're having an incredible time all day long. It's like a party all day long. It's like Christmas all day long. And your whole life becomes like that. And it's from learning about morality and keeping it nicely. Because some omniscient being who knows about all this stuff said, if you do this stuff, you will have all these intense meditation experiences, you know. And that's the obstacle that's keeping you away from them, you know. So you have to learn especially your bodhisattva vows. And then you have to go on to tantric vows and keep them nicely, keep them well. And then no, you know, I hate to say vows. In New York, I tricked them. I didn't say vows. I said, Buddha gave us a list. If you keep this list, you get all this stuff will happen to you, you know. All this incredible stuff. Walk into a restaurant, there's an angel serving you, you know. You're like, wow, you know what he's saying? I never believed in all this stuff. They said, yeah, it's because you didn't keep your vows before, you know. Now you're studying, you know. And you say, are you really an angel? They say, yeah, I am, you know. And say, that's cool. And then you try to pay the bill and say, angels don't take money, you know, you can leave, you know. You're like, this is really happening. You say, yeah, this is really happening, you know. And you just leave, and that's all. It happens, okay? It can't happen unless you keep that list, okay? And you have to do the list first, okay? So you have to study those things. We'll talk about it next weekend. You really want to know how to be a great meditator, that's all. Why? Your mind is a karmic result. What you hear in your mind all day long is as much karmic result as the weather and your body, the way your body feels, and who you're meeting in life, everything else. Don't think that your mind is not a karma. It's the result of a karma. And whether you have to put up with some whiny thoughts going through your head all day, or whether you want to hear some intense angel thoughts all day, it depends on what you do and what you say to other people. That's all. You'll never have a great meditation if you don't start doing it, because it's a karma. It's a result of karma. Okay? Like everything. Okay? Last thing. Jetsokapa, in his letter, he complained. He said, nobody in Tibet gets anymore. Nobody's even talking about it. Nobody's got a book that says, you want to have a good meditation? Stop bothering other people. Start helping other people. The con from that, in 6 months, you'll be having incredible meditations. He says, it really upsets me that no one's talking about it. No one talks about it. You know, he wrote a text like that. It's very beautiful. Okay. Last thing. The English is N-A-M. T-K-P. P-A-N-E. By the way, just occurred to me. People come to me and say, did I really hear you say that, or did you mean something else? Okay. I was talking about the forces of ancient India and said that the Buddha taught all four. Did them wrong. Okay. I made that statement the other day. Somebody thought I was talking about the four school of Tibetan Buddhism, Nyingma, Yusaka, and Galupa. I'm not. Okay. The Buddha taught four ancient schools of Buddhism in India. Okay. 2,500 years ago. Abhidharma, the logic schools, the mind-only school, and then the middle way school. And the presentation particularly on emptiness of the lower three and a half, actually, are wrong or incomplete. Okay? What, did Buddha like lying? Or is he like trying to confuse them? No. Did teach those minds emptiness. They're not correct. Why? Because it helps them come higher. It brings them up one more step on the ladder. And then finally at the end, he hits them with the real one. Okay? So technically, these three are wrong. Are they beneficial? Yes. Should you learn them? Yes. Are they absolutely correct? No. Did the Buddha teach them? Yes. Did they help people? Yes. Do you need them to see emptiness directly? Probably. Okay? You have to learn all of them. In the monastery, we say, let's debate. The guy says, yeah. See, what hat you want to wear? I'll be a mind only. Okay, be dumb. Okay, let's go. And then you have to stick to that school. It's very difficult. You have to know that school exactly, and you can't be in a school that you really believe in. You see? So what hat do you wear today? I'll wear an Abhidharma hat. Okay, like I'm an American, you know what I'm really good at in the monastery is defending the idea of the Mimamsa or something like that, who say there's no future lives. I grew up with that before, you know. So I was in the monastery, hey, we need to be a Mimamsa. Oh, Losan Chinzen, hey, come on. That's my monk's name, right? They say, come on, you be the Mimamsa. You're so good at it, you know. You're so good at defending the idea that there's no future lives. When you die, everything stops, you know. And you just put on your hat, okay? So the lowest three are wrong of ancient India, three and a half, actually, okay? I didn't mean to say that all the other traditions of Tibet are wrong. That's not correct. Ideally, all the four traditions of Tibet follow the higher middle way. They all teach emptiness according to the highest middle way. The great yogis, great masters of all the other traditions and the Gelugpa have all taught emptiness in the same way. Okay, and essentially, now there are exceptions there. Some teachers, probably to help students who couldn't accept a higher one, have taught them something which is technically wrong about emptiness. And you have to do it as trying to bring the student up higher. You see that? Is it wrong? Yes. Is it useful? Yes. Should they teach it? Yes. You know, should we ban those books? No. Should we read those books for our own highest view? No. Okay? And you have to remember that. Okay? So that's all. Say, Namdo, Pang. Namdo, Pang. Namdo means impressions, okay? Something like that. Impressions. Bang means stop them, give them up. Impressions is a very delicate word. I mean, impressions can mean a lot of things. Here it means, it has two great meanings, okay? The word impression here has two great meanings. The first one is called Duyen. Say Duyen. Duyen. Duyen means the objects of the senses. Ice cream, popcorn, watermelon, Cheerios, other beautiful things, okay? Objects of the touch, which is sex, okay? Objects of sound, music, objects of your eyes, you know, being too attached to having a beautiful house and expensive things and things like that. These are called the objects of the senses. If you're going to be a good meditator, you have to kind of disassociate yourself from them, okay? Especially in retreat, okay? No music, no fancy food, no sex, nothing like that. You have to shut off from your senses, okay? You cannot live in the world of the senses. You have a choice, right? You can't mean that you shouldn't listen to music. It doesn't mean that a monk or nun is evil if they listen to music, you know? Can I turn on the car radio and still be a monk or nun, you know? A little delicate. I'm not getting... Anyway, the point is that once you start meditating seriously, you'll find out that you play a lot of music. It'll run through your mind as you're meditating, okay? You start hearing, especially the bad songs that they played and you couldn't hit the radio on time, you know? Especially the monkeys or something. They start, you know, into your mind. Something that you didn't want to meditate about. And it'll ruin your meditation. Same for food. If you're thinking about food during meditation, it'll ruin your meditation, okay? It's very good if you could have them the food somewhere else, okay? It takes a lot of strength to smell chocolate cookie and not think about them. Okay, so make sure they're doing all that stuff in a separate building, okay, or separate, you know, smells are really distracting. Perfumes and things like that, you know, especially if you're in a group meditation, shouldn't be having those, you know what I mean? And it's not like it's evil. It's this Judeo-Christian thing where you're not supposed to enjoy anything, and if you enjoy it, you're an evil person or something like that. The whole point of meditation is to get to a Buddha paradise where they have all that stuff forever, all the time, in its highest ecstasy form. You know, Buddha paradises are not these boring places where people sit around and be stoic and don't listen to rock and roll or something like that. Forget it. You know, of course, all of those things are there, but they last forever. And you don't die while listening to them. See the difference? So, when you're meditating, you have to shut down on the senses. You have to try not to have a lot of objects of the senses around. Okay? Nantok in another meaning means think about a lot of things. All right? A lot of thoughts going on in your head. Worrying about your projects. Worrying about who's taking care of your dog. Okay? Stuff like that. All right? Shut out those extra thoughts. We're going to go through a text by Nagarjuna where he discusses the obstacles, five obstacles to meditation. That's going to be dessert, okay? It's not part of the course. I thought you'd love to do it. But he discusses there the idea of, this is Ram Dass, right? Be here now, okay? And it's very much part of Nagarjuna's practice of meditation. Don't worry about what you're going to do next week. And don't think about your high school girlfriend, boyfriend. You know, they're gone. You're not that age anymore. It's all over with. Don't live in the past. Don't remember the glories of your past and when you were young and things were better. And don't worry about next week when you're really going to be able to pay off your credit cards. And stop thinking about the past. Stop thinking about the future. Be right here in this room. Take what you have now. Work with it. And don't dream about the past and the future. You know what I mean? Put your mind here. And don't have a lot of other thoughts. When you meditate, you have to do that. Okay? That's the last instructions of the conducive atmosphere. Okay? Those are the six parts of a conducive atmosphere. All right? Tuesday night, we'll start the presentation on the problems of meditation, different problems. And this will be a very nice exercise because... these are the enemies of meditation. What I'd like you to do in the meantime, if you could, kill. You know, most of you are keeping a book. Eat a book for the next 5 days, okay, until next 7 days, okay? I'd like to that you record how you're meditating. My first thing, okay? How did your meditation go? How did your meditation go to do today? General, okay, one sentence. You know, went pretty well, didn't go too well, started out fine, collapsed later. Okay. Right. General comment how you meditate. I want you to do this for the next 7 days. Okay. I assume you're gonna use the preliminaries, okay? Please do. Okay? And don't your Tuesday without your meditation cushion. Alright? Don't expect LMB to have 100 meditation cushions ready. Okay? They're not. And they don't know your butt size. You do. Okay? So a square meditation cushion under and your standard meditation cushion that you're gonna sit on. Don't come down it, okay? Have something ready. You can strip your couch or something, all right? The second question says, did I have more problems with my jingwa or did I have more problems with my gupa? Okay? And I want you to record that. It'll be one or the other. If you're lucky, you get both in one meditation. Okay? Jingwa means dullness, okay? Sleepy, spaced out, hard, falling asleep, too much food, too warm, not enough sleep. Okay? What's gupa? Agitation means like thinking of too many things, okay? Couldn't stop thinking about my boss. Couldn't stop thinking about what's on TV tonight. Couldn't stop thinking about what I'm going to have for breakfast. My mind kept wandering off to other things. It's wandering of the mind. I'd like you to record which was more of a problem for you, okay? I'd like you to record what was the condition of your food that day, okay? Was your stomach empty or full? When you start to meditate, what was the condition of your stomach? I'm trying to get you sensitive to this, okay? Did you have food in your stomach or not? All right, need to know that. And how much sleep did you have that before? Okay. How much sleep did you have the night before? Last thing. How did your relationships go that day? You know, were you generally get along well with other people that day? Did you have a fight with anybody? Were you upset at anybody? Like that. You know, any relationship problems that day. I'd like you to track these five things each day, starting tomorrow, okay? So in the morning, you're going to meditate. You're going to do the posture perfectly. You're going to do all the preliminaries the way we did it. I want you to keep a record at the end of the round. How did meditation go? Were you going towards the sleepy side, or were you going towards the wondering side, or to cover both? What was the condition of your stomach when you meditated? Did you get enough sleep the night before? In the day after you meditated, right? In the whole day, well, how did you relate to other people? Did you have any problems with other people, or how did it go with other people throughout the day? Okay, and start watching those things. All right, this is in addition to your book. Okay, those of you doing a book, right? Yeah. 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 Meaning, I want you to start noticing that if you have a good meditation, a sincere meditation, you have a much better day with other people. And on a day that you skip, you'll start getting grumpy at other people or something like that. I want you to prove it to yourself. Okay. So I ask you to do that every day for the next 7 days. Okay. Deal?
Deal.
In a diamond business, we say mazal. Mazal ubracha means. It's Yiddish, and it means, do we got a deal or not? You know, and in the diamond business, we're not allowed to do lawsuits. There are no lawyers. All the business is done by word of mouth. There's no contracts. There's nothing written down. Everything is mazal ubracha. You know, once you give mazal, you have to do it. It's your sacred word. And in the diamond business, in the real diamond business, you know, the real big diamond business, there's no paperwork. And there's no lawsuits. You know, everything is honor. Everything is a code between the people. So once you give mazal, it's like nobody can go back on a mazal. Okay? So I'm going to ask you to show me some of you to make sure you're keeping your mazals. All right? Okay, here we go. Okay, please, at least for the next 7 days, meditate every day, okay? At least, all right? Mazal on that too, okay.